sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Well, hello and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is episode number 337 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I am sorry that, I had a rough weekend. I was upstate New York, absolutely magnificent, just gorgeous colors changing. And I took a few pictures with my iPhone. I got to tell you, that iPhone has some great camera abilities. I mean, the incredible colors that you can capture, and now even work a little bit with some of the filters and effects they have. Great. Why anybody needs a camera anymore? I don't know. You know, I used to carry around 35, 40 pounds of camera equipment on my back. I had my 35 millimeter with five different lenses, with my tripod, even though it was one of those really fancy graphite carbon fiber tripods that was really light. If you totaled it all up, it was like 30 something pounds, easy for all the equipment, and always invariably I'd want to take a picture with a particular lens, and I'd say, oh, I'm going to put this lens on, and you know what, I don't want to carry it all day with me today. And I'd end up using maybe two lenses of the whole kit throughout the whole trip wherever I was. And then for small trips, like I did a quick 2 days upstate New York in Chappaqua this weekend, you know, I mean, what's the point of bringing all that? I mean, I could have just taken some just magnificent pictures, but the iPhone did a fine job. And who's printing pictures anyway these days, right? What are you doing with your pictures? You're taking them and you're uploading them to a site, or you're sharing them with the friends on a mobile in whatever way that you decide to. You're uploading it to a photo stream or something. Or maybe, you know, you're using one of the photo sharing sites, or maybe even using Shutterfly, but you just share the pictures there and you don't bother printing them. So it's kind of interesting, the evolution of the camera, I think. And that leads me all the way back to my apologies. There was no way I could do it. I tried. I really tried to set the schedule up right, and I just couldn't make it happen. So what we're going to do today is we're going to have a brief show because there's some very important things that I want to talk about and some things that you need to know about regarding both earnings and the economy and the markets. And then we'll pick it up regular pace next week. But again, I do apologize for that. And I know I'm starting to get emails in like, what happened? Where are you? Did I miss it? We're here. Everything's good. Just for whatever reason, I couldn't make it all happen this weekend. And I promise I'll put a couple of pictures on the show notes for this particular episode of what I took. Just a couple. Anyway, a couple of things are happening here. First of all, to mention DH Unplugged. You have just a little while left towards the end of today to get your guests in for the closest to the pin competition for Caterpillar. And we're going to announce the winner when I talk with John later today. It'll be announced tonight. You'll get it tomorrow. Who won for SodaStream, the $50 gift certificate over on DH Unplugged? You can get that over at iTunes, by the way, or right on the DH Unplugged website. You can listen into that. So we have earnings coming out. We have some very interesting things that are happening. Now, I thought this was just fascinating what's gone on the last couple of days, in particular on Monday. So maybe it's good that we waited to do the show for a little while here. Now, on Monday, companies like Tesla, so 8%, AOL, 4%, Sturm Ruger, 3.85%, OpenTable, 4.5%, Tempur-Pedic Sealy, 3.5%, SolarCity, 11.3%, Oasis Petroleum was up another 5.8%. Now, why are those all interesting? What do they all have to do with each other? Well, here's the deal. They're all coming out with earnings either the next day or the day after. So you're seeing all of a sudden a buying interest ahead of earnings, not just nipping at the stock. We're talking about full-fledged buying before the earnings, when you have the most risky time for moves on a stock due to the question of whether they're going to beat or miss earnings or estimates on revenues or maybe margins or a whole host of things, including outlook from the company, the guidance from the company, maybe buybacks. They're going to increase, decrease, dividends. You're entering into the most aggressively traded time and usually the thinnest when it comes out pre-market or after hours of a stock. And meanwhile, stocks are being bid up dramatically before the earnings announcement. Now, what does that say? What does that mean? Well, it means there's a lot of optimism that's going into the fact that when companies come out with earnings, the first thing that happens, it seems, no matter what the earnings are, it's immediately bid up. You can watch almost any stock that comes out with an earnings announcement. It's like announcement of earnings equals buy. Now, forget about what the earnings were. Forget about if they meet or missed. As soon as that announcement comes out, it seems that either the systems or individuals, they just immediately go and push the buy button and they buy and figure out what's going to happen later. Buy first, ask questions later. And that has been a trend. And we've also seen many companies, once again, get a buy. What I mean buy is they get a pass. So their earnings maybe are okay. Their EPS beat, which is the game, of course. Their revenues have been falling short for the most part. As a matter of fact, the companies that beat on revenue and beat on EPS without no change in outlook have probably been the best performing in this quarter, because the big issue and the big focus is on, hey, what's going on with your revenue? What's going on with the quality of your earnings? Is the earnings all made up of just expense cuts, which is good, fine. That does help the bottom line of a company. But what about the consistency moving forward if, in fact, you can't keep and maintain the level of revenue? And how much more do you have to cut to keep those earnings going higher? So you see things like Tesla, which was fading for about 4 or 5 days, just immediately get a gigantic move to the upside on Monday, nonstop, just plowing in. And even in pre-market on Tuesday morning, they're starting to see a bit of a bid. Michael Kors, which had just lukewarm earnings, by the way, this morning, Tuesday morning before the open, is bid up about 0.5%. Now, will that hold? Well, the way things are going these days, regardless of really the outlook, even if there is a little bit of a concern about the overall spending patterns and maybe the quality of earnings, there's this whole idea, it seems, this whole thesis that, you know, things are going to get better. And if they don't, all right, we'll sell later. Might as well get in on the action, because there has been a dislocation in the price of the stocks, many stocks, not all, but many stocks, and their fundamentals. That doesn't mean that necessarily we're seeing that technicals are taking over, but what we're seeing is that a level of enthusiasm for equities, and that can be shown, as we did talk about, I think, on DH Unplugged and here maybe last week or the week before, on the amount of equity inflows that we're seeing over the last, how long is that? I guess the last maybe 2 months, particularly the last month and a half. Now, if a company misses, let's talk about Tesla for a second. We've been moving in and out of that position a little bit here and there and picking up a few dollars and being very careful not to hold it too long or overnight, because there is this crazy bid action that we've been seeing that has been working with that stock. And again, after last quarter's earnings, which if you recall, I tried to deconstruct and show how, you know, what's going on really with the earnings of this company. And what we found, if you remember, was that the company had a considerable amount of one-time revenues that came on and a little bit of creative accounting that allowed them to beat by such a wide margin. Now, if you would have taken that out, they still would have beat. But at the same time, the question remains, can they continue to have that level of revenue, and even though maybe car sales are moving higher, without those one-time benefits? In other words, will the slope of the growth of the earnings continue to move as fast as they have? I mean, already if you do a comparison of Tesla to other car companies, there's a gigantic differential between what the valuation of Tesla is and what the valuation of a Ford or GM is in terms of basic price earnings multiples and things of that nature. Okay, that's fine. Let's even go so far as saying that Tesla deserves to have that much of a benefit because it's new, it's innovative, it's desirous. You know, people like the car. I mean, for the most part, that's not the same as somebody buying maybe a Ford and, you know, who's really going crazy about getting a new Expedition and showing it off to all their friends. Tesla has a bit more sex appeal, a lot more, you know, a wow factor. Remember way back when the iPad first came out and you saw somebody with it and you're like, hey, he's got an iPad. Let me check that thing out. I want to see what it's all about. I want to hold it. I want to feel it. I want to see it. Ask questions. Do you like it? You know, what? Tell me more about this. Well, Tesla kind of has the same thing going. So the owners are loving it. They're you know, a lot of owners have bought Tesla. They bought the company. They bought the fact that this is a great stock for the future. And we'll have to see. Now that it's bid up, again, 8% prior to the earnings, maybe just squeezing out some of the shorts, the pattern is setting up on a chart to look like if there is a beat, it could do a dramatic move higher. But yet at the same time, you have to watch the price under about 169, 168 and a half, somewhere around there. Right there is where there is a line in the sand where there has been a continuation of support, but yet at the same time, when it fell below that, it really rocketed down pretty well. That was last week. Now, some of the other companies, you have to wonder, like, for example, Tempur Sealy, the mattress company. Now, they are not much different, a little bit different, but not much different than a competitor of theirs, which is called Select Comfort. And Select Comfort came out with earnings 2 or 3 weeks ago and just bombed. I mean, it was horrible. Just terrible, terrible numbers. Meanwhile, there was a little bit of pain felt by Tempur-Pedic for a couple days, and then it just started rising. And then again, prior to earnings, with the notion that in the backdrop of all this is the fact that you have another company in the same genre really bombing, nobody seems to care about that at all, somehow differentiating this company from the other and saying there's, I mean, no difference. There, you know, in terms of, or no care, I should say, but there is a difference, but no care. SolarCity is another one of Elon Musk's company, up 11.5%. Again, same situation over and over. There was some other things that were going on with the solars, but bottom line is that the idea that the Fed will continue to provide liquidity has continued to provide a significant amount of enthusiasm. And some are now saying, as a matter of fact, I think I saw on the cover of, I think it was it USA Today on Friday, the weekend edition, questioning whether the stocks are in a bubble or not. Now you're starting to hear a lot more about that from a lot of people saying, you know what, valuations are getting a little bit crazy. And more importantly, we have a level of enthusiasm that has been now put on, and retail investors are feeling it and investing money into the equity funds, and that's why you're seeing such a great amount of equity fund inflows. Now, here's the thing. If you see that retail is entering equities at a breakneck pace, what does that tell you? Traditionally, you'd have to say, well, you know, retail really is the last in. Now, you say, this time is different. Retail is usually the last in, and oftentimes that things are getting very frothy. They buy and sell as a group at the wrong times. They're never early. They're usually pretty late. That's what really propped up the whole real estate bubble, if you remember. Remember being at cocktail parties and being with your friends and maybe even family members, and they're all talking about their latest real estate deal. They're talking about, hey, you know what? I picked up this property. I flipped it pretty quickly. I made myself 50 grand. I'm doing it again. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do it three times. I'm going to take all the money out of my house. I'm going to see how much I can put down at a minimum to buy these fixer-uppers, and I'm going to flip them. Remember that? Everybody telling all their stories. You can go back a little bit further. 1999, 2000, beginning of it. 1998, everybody's talking about, wow, did you see that stock? It went up $30. What do? Well, they deliver groceries, but it's kind of cool because they do it somewhat on the internet. Or, you know, well, I got this new company, and man, it's great. It does blah, blah, blah. And, you know, on and on and on and on. No care about really what the company necessarily does, just that the price was going up. And that's what we call, you know, froth. Now, at the same time, we are seeing that the KRI indicator, the key reversal indicator that was really hot about, what, 3 weeks ago, has started to get back into a range of market in equilibrium, centered, zero. Meaning that a lot of the froth has been pushed off over the last several days. There were a couple clusters that I mentioned where we see that we have a batch of very high readings and a few different calculations that go into that to form a cluster formation. We saw that, and the market did cool off after that. The question, though, is, and I always look at this when we talk about the reversal potential and a market being overheated versus oversold. Oftentimes, when a market is significantly overheated or oversold, it takes more than just getting back into equilibrium. What happens usually is the continuation of the prior trend will continue for a while after the reversal takes place. So that did happen. And then what you see is the market move back towards the continuation of cooling off and taking off much of the froth. Now, this market doesn't seem like it wants to go down for any reason. It could be Europe slowing down. It could be the dollar. It could be oil. Oil, by the way, at 94 and change at about a four-month low on inventories. We'll see more about that later today with the API. And we'll also see tomorrow with the Department of Energy number at 10:30 in the morning what the inventory levels are. But when you think about it, really, there has been very little that can push down this market, which is a good thing. It's a sign of a bull market, or at least of a rally mode in a market. And that's good. But there also is times where you find that the ignoring of key information is questionable. It's concerning. It's worrisome. Because when you start getting into a pattern where we're relying only on the Fed because we're looking at, okay, unemployment maybe, okay, you know, leveling off, doing better, although last month was a little bit light, and we're seeing the GDP is slowing down, and all of that yields the same answer that, oh, that's good, because the Fed will continue to pump in stimulus. You have to wonder how long that can last. I mean, they're not here forever, although it seems like they are. Admittedly, they seem like they are. But at the same time, this whole ramp the market in the beginning of the day, cool it off during the middle of the day, and then find buyers towards the end of the day is something that you've seen before. We've seen time and time again. Oftentimes, when you see the money coming in early, it's retail. Again, a confirmation that retail is in the buy mode right now, because there has to be a deployment of those assets that have been put into the funds the day before, let's say. And what happens then is that that hot money and that fresh money usually will be the last to leave, by the way, and the selling that takes place by the institutions against that money is what you see in the underlying process. Last week, we saw a lot of the go-go stocks, the Momo stocks, really take a beating on a few days. Like, for example, you know, you look at Facebook. Facebook had, just as we expected, you know, you see a big pop in their earnings. They did a great job of moving from the desktop platform over to mobile. That was good. More revenue there and better overall earnings. That was great. Stock popped like crazy. It was up, I don't know, 17 or 18%. And it started to come in. Why? Well, Facebook said, listen, we have 1 in 5 articles to, you know, to the ads to the article flow, or 5%, I should say, 1 in 20. They don't want to really increase that. They don't want to have a extraordinary amount of advertising mixed in so that it loses its effect, and therefore they're essentially capping their potential revenue from that. Now, actually, I talked to Frank Curzio about that, and we went back and forth kind of discussing where the benefits may be and where the problems may be with that. And one of the things we talked about was how, you know, it's kind of interesting because if, in fact, they do make a limitation on the amount of ads that can be put in any sequence, the potential is that the pricing for those ads could go up because there's less supply, which makes a lot of sense. That's not going to happen immediately, though. We'll have to see over the next few quarters what happens. Now, Facebook, as we know, did kind of a face plant, right? They turned around dramatically the next day. Then they rose up again. There was a big fight at the $50 line. And now we're talking about the company trading somewhere, you know, just below $48 per share. And the last couple of days have been pretty harsh on that. And by the way, I had a question about this from a listener. who said they bought the, I believe it was the November 16th $50 strike puts prior to the earnings. When the earnings came out, obviously it was down, and then when it started to come underneath the $50 number, obviously it reversed, and the put went up in value. But the big question was that, wait a minute, it's still below the $50 line, and we just saw like a 20% drop in the value of the put. How is that possible? Stock is down compared to yesterday, and yet at the same time, the put is down. Well, the reason for that is that the volatility factor, the surprise factor, is now out of the option as soon as those earnings come out. And if those earnings come out, unless there's a very big drop to the stock under 50 into the money, so maybe if you go down to 45 immediately, you're going to see a lot of that volatility, which makes up some of the pricing factor of an option, just dissipate. No longer is the unknown there. No longer is the aspect of, wow, we can, you know, we're pricing this now for a really big move of maybe about 8% on the earnings, let's say. That's out because there's no longer the earnings that are going to be ahead of us. So what you're seeing there is that you have to be very careful on your timing, because you have to remember that an option is made up of several different factors to get the pricing. You have the time. You have the intrinsic value, how much it is above or below the strike price, depending on whether or not it's a call or a put. And you have also the volatility factor. And that's why when you see the VIX move much higher, options cost more for the same option that would be if a VIX was much lower. So volatility of the stock or the markets are up, and you see a lot more uncertainty, pricing of options usually goes higher. So when you hear people saying, hey, you know, I could buy protection on the stock really cheap right now by buying options, well, that's because the volatility is kind of out of it. And if volatility returns, even if, by the way, the stock price doesn't change, so volatility returns into the stock and into the markets, you'll see a move on the underlying price of the option. Then the other thing is, and I'll end on this, is the closer you get to the expiration time, the less there is a uncertainty factor in there, because you're getting closer and closer, and that drops as well. So now what happens is you start trading much more towards the intrinsic value, which is the value above or below or in the money that you are for the stock. So if you're at 48 and you have a put option 50, you got 2 plus whatever those other components are, which are much lower than they were just the day before. Talk about oil. Well, oil, we've been talking about and hawking about that, you know what, this is just crazy, these prices. And finally, they're starting to come into a little bit of a more reasonable, you know, price zone. Even with the news last week that we saw there was some fighting over in the Middle East, it didn't seem to affect oil at all. Saudi Arabia did drop their prices on the Brent crude, in, you know, the European crude, if you will. And that is probably going along with the fact that the EU has cut their growth targets just today to about 1.1%, which is much lower than was before for the next fiscal year. But their next quarter looks like it's going to be in the negative territory by about a half a percent. So we'll see how that really affects things. But the euro has been plummeting, went from 138 down to about 134 and change recently. And the dollar has been coming up. That dollar that has been coming up hasn't really been very beneficial to the yen, though, which is really interesting. The yen has not really been able to get a lot of traction. And what we're going to be waiting for is by the end of the day today, on Tuesday, we're going to see that the central bank over in Japan will have some decision, some announcement that they're going to be coming out with. And we should be able to see what exactly is going to be. Now, we know that they are very much inclined to beating the yen down and just destroying the yen as much as possible, even though they say, well, we're not doing that. Well, we do know that that's what's happening. But now, the problem has become that they have put an extraordinary measure on the table, and the yen seems to be stabilizing at these levels, about 98, 97, right around there. One of the after effects is that the big growth that we saw with many of the international exporting companies, such as many of the car manufacturers, was amazingly beneficial and impacted their earnings greatly over the last year, let's say. Unfortunately, though, those same growth, that incredible growth they had, you just can't keep it up, especially if the yen isn't continuing to weaken. So we saw recently a couple of the car companies come out and their price of their stock dropped way off, 10-15% on the announcement that, hey, you know what, we're not going to make these kind of earnings moving forward because we don't have the tailwind of the yen anymore at the level we had it. So we can't keep up that level of earnings. It'll be very interesting because, like I said, they have been very much inclined to doing everything they can in order to take that yen lower, and they kind of reach their level of potential, it looks like. So who knows what the next thing they announce is going to be and what the net effect is going to be. Because you would think that they'd have to do something just, remarkable at this point to, beyond what they've done already and beyond what is already priced into the market to really move it down much lower. We'll finish up with the fact that we have a lot of things coming out this week. We have the ISM Non-Manufacturing, the Service Index coming out, and expectations are pretty high for a decent number, much better than it was. We'll see how that works out. It was a big surprise to the downside last month. We also have at the end of the week the jobs number coming out, and this is going to be kind of interesting because we did see an uptick in the CPI last week, and jobs numbers that we saw that was delayed last month, we have about a 7.2% or so unemployment rate based on the old slash new metrics, which we know is not exactly right, but we did only see 120,000 added. Now, that was a little bit shy, and the question is, well, what does that really mean? How much of the government shutdown is going to be involved in this particular report? And if it's really bad, will that be more ammunition, at least in the mind of investors, that the Fed will do something and continue to do something? Or is it going to be, on the other hand, it could be just totally taken and say, you know what, we're not even counting this number because it is skewed by what's going on with the government hiring. We'll have to see next month and figure out how to average that out. Or is it going to be a great number and surprise everybody like it it seems that it often does. I mean, analysts have been just terrible with their numbers. As a matter of fact, the Economic Surprise Index has hit a lowest it's hit since, I think June. Actually, I'm going to run that today. I want to see what the exact trend of that is. I'm going to write that down. It's a nice thing when you actually look at that and you compare that to the actual markets and find out, because oftentimes the Economic Surprise Index is a leading indicator. We saw a big uptick in that where economic announcements were really surprising to the upside for a while, and now it's starting to turn around dramatically. So what happens now is that analysts will adjust their numbers down, and therefore the assumptions go down, and you get into this whole cycle of them trying to get closer and closer to the truth, and the equity traders who trade on fundamentals and economics and outlook will look at that and adjust their portfolio models accordingly, and depending on how far they're off and if there is reason to believe that the continuation of that trend will be in place, then what happens is that they move out of equities and maybe into bonds. And we have seen bonds once again getting bought up with the fact that there is, quote unquote, no tapering at this point. So lots going on right there. We will be back next week. Like I said, it was going to be a short show. I want you to pay attention to the earnings and what happens after the earnings. Already we're seeing, by the way, pre-market, Michael Kors up 3.5% and Tesla up 2.5% at 179 and change. I am going to be very fascinating to watch, or it's going to be interesting and fascinating to watch what happens with Tesla. It should be a very interesting number coming out, and we'll see how they do, in fact, compare to the previous expectations that they're going to have just this monster's growth, which would be great. I mean, it's a beautiful car, no question about that. And they have great opportunity, and they keep on coming out with enough news and PR to really keep that stock, piping hot. So we'll talk about that and watch where, in fact, Facebook goes, because here's your line in the sand, about 47.5. If Facebook does, in fact, move below that, you do have a pretty good drop potential down to at least 45, if not 43, over the next little while. So thanks for joining me. Check out DH Unplugged. Of course, also, we have a webinar that is happening tomorrow and Thursday. We're doing one on the actually, we have Corey Rosenberg going to be teaching tomorrow. If you haven't gone there and seen what we're going to be talking about, it's really going to be a great conversation. It is 4:30 after the close of the market on the 6th, Wednesday, and it is free. Go over to triggercharts.com/events. You can see all the things that are coming up. This is all about the trader's playbook. This is going to be all about how you can actually utilize some of the charts. We use the trigger charts to actually find the where the supply demand is and where the sweet spots are for big moves on the upside or downside for any position. So definitely get a reservation there. Seats are limited. We have a good amount of people already reserved, but I know we usually have a few extra seats. We have room for about 100 and something. Other than that, I guess that's about it. You can always write me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com if you have any questions. Thanks for being patient with me, and I appreciate you staying along. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.